creepy and the kooky, the serious and spooky, they're all together ooky.
Okay, there's the music, which means it must be time to start the Wild Things show with your host Josh and Robert. I am Josh, and that means that you must be Robert?
I think so.
All right, how you doing?
Not too bad. How about yourself?
I've been better, but I've been so much worse, dude.
Oh, so have I.
I don't even want to talk about it. No. Why are you making me think about it?
No, I don't want to think about it.
Okay, super. Well, then let's talk and think about something else.
Okay.
Maybe today would be a good day to talk about conservation and why it matters.
Really? Okay. Well, kinda like that one.
It's a subject that you hear sometimes, depending on the circles that you're in, and then other times it gets really overlooked. And the thing is that conservation is the whole reason why we have an outdoors to even go out there and enjoy. And it's something that we really need to think hard about in today's world, because as there gets to be more and more of us, and as we become more and more demanding, then conserving wildlife and conserving nature in general becomes ever more important. Because we've got to have some place that we can go to get away from all these people.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's... it's definitely mental therapy, for sure. You know, but it's also... it's a huge part of our history and our evolution of things, I guess, to some extent, you know, so it's nice to get back to see something that you can, rather than just looking in a history book and going, oh, I remember when, or, hey, I wish I would have gotten to see something like that, but never got the opportunity to.
Right. And I don't want to be a caveman. I don't want to go back to a pre-agricultural society and have to live off the land. I don't even want to go take a time machine back to the 1800s and explore the Old West. But I do want to have some kind of a connection to the natural world.
Right.
That's got to be there for me. Otherwise, I don't know how to function. I don't know how to exist.
Well, absolutely. And the other thing is, too, is, you know, so much of that is that we're so about evolving in such a fast pace that we're overlooking some of these things and destroying some of these things at such an alarming rate. Who knows what's out there that is natural that can help save a lot of things in this world versus trying to come up with something synthetic, like some of the different cancers, just for a broad spectrum example. You know, who's to say that rare swamp flower that nobody seems to care about in general, but would rather build a pharmaceutical company on top of it, when that could have been the absolute cure to it all.
Right. It definitely could have. There's a lot of things that we find in nature that we thought had no value and then discover later, hey, wait a minute, that was really important.
Yeah.
You know, look at things like swampland that our ancestors were actively trying to drain as much of it as they possibly could. Because, hey, that's just wasted land out there. You know, we got to get rid of that. All that's good for is breeding mosquitoes. We need to convert it into agricultural lands. And, you know, then you get things like, oh, well, we never realized the importance of the Everglades as a natural filter and making sure that you don't have excess nutrient loads that show up in our coastal waters and cause ridiculous red tides, which here in Southwest Florida, those have been national news for the past couple of years.
Or wiping out one of the largest reefs in the world.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, go ridiculous one extreme farther.
Stuff that people would have never thought of. So I think it's important, if we're going to talk about conservation, that we define it in some way. And also that we talk about how it differs from preservation, which the two things sometimes get linked together in people's minds. But conservation is not necessarily preservation. When I think of preservation, I think of taking some place and making it really off limits to people and keeping people out of it in an effort to try to keep it in as natural a state as possible. And while I do think that preservation in some places makes a lot of sense, for example, coral atolls in the tropical Indo-Pacific, places that are very fragile habitats that it wouldn't take much human activity to irrevocably destroy them, then those types of places really are better off preserved. But in most cases, conservation, I think, is a better option. And conservation basically differs from preservation in that it allows human use. It allows take. When we talk about conservation, the conservation ethic in the U.S. here started with hunters. And it started with folks who wanted to always make sure that they had a place to go to hunt. And in order to do that, they had to set aside areas of habitat for the animals that they wanted to go in and hunt. Because you're not going to have a place to go hunt elk, for example, if you destroy all of their habitat areas and turn them into farmlands and turn them into places where people can live. So you had to set aside places where this is habitat for the animals. This is some place where they can do their wild animal thing. And as a result, then we've got some place that we can go in and we can shoot them. And to a lot of people in today's world, that seems like very backwards thinking, that you preserve a place so that you can go in there and kill some of the things that are in it. But still today, a huge amount of our conservation funds come from hunters and hunting.
Absolutely. Because all these other people who think they're actually doing, think that that's backwards or whatever, don't want to do anything except for whine about it and point out something that is basically obvious. They're not seeing the forest through the one tree that's in their way, basically.
Right.
You know, and we actually know a guy who's in the herping industry that one of his slogans is conservation through commercialization.
Absolutely.
And being able to utilize these properties and plots of land and areas brings it in the forefront where you can actually see it, touch it, feel it, photograph it in person, and be able to take it and share it with other people that are either of like-mindedness or introduce somebody into it that can make it more aware and hopefully be one of the people that will help to conserve it in a positive manner.
Right, and to me, that's why conservation in most cases is a much better choice than preservation, because it allows us to still be a part of these places. And the more you're a part of it, the more you're going to fall in love with it. And the more you fall in love with it, the more passionate you're going to be about actually doing something that helps keep it the way that it is, that helps keep it from being destroyed. You know, I really like the idea of those coral atolls in the South Pacific going untouched by human hands. But if you set them aside and you make them preserved areas and you literally can't go there now, then they also become abstract. It's almost like they're not real because you can't go, you can't touch it, you can't experience it, versus some place like the Galapagos Islands where you can go and where you can see what an amazing and magical place that is. You know, that really leaves a mark on you that you want to do something to help preserve it, you know, and
or go back home and preserve something else that stands out in your mind once you're aware of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when it comes time to, you know, what are you going to put your limited resources behind? Because, you know, it takes money to do all of this stuff. Then you're definitely more likely to give money and to give your effort and to give the fruit of your labor to something that you've fallen in love with rather than something that is abstract.
Right, absolutely. Goes back to being able to see it, touch it, smell it, photograph it.
Right, and this is why a huge amount of that money has come from hunters, because hunters are very passionate about their sport. And for example, okay, duck stamps. If you're a duck hunter, you got to have duck stamps. They're used for, they're going to allow you to hunt migratory birds. And you might think, well, it's just a tax. But it's not just a tax. 98 cents out of every dollar that they spend on duck stamps goes directly to purchasing habitat or acquiring conservation easements. So they've bought almost 6,000 acres of habitat with duck stamp funds that probably would have otherwise been turned into something else. It would have become rangeland. It would have been drained swamp to grow corn on. Something would have happened to those lands. And when you look around today, the number of ducks that we have is kind of nuts. I mean, we're seeing it now here in South Florida, where we're in a bird migration corridor, where we're seeing huge numbers of waterfowl, more waterfowl than we've seen in, I mean, if you went back 25 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, yeah, there were ducks around, but they weren't like the numbers that we have now.
Oh, because gosh, no.
There's been such a push towards making sure that they have wetlands for breeding in.
Well, what is it? Ducks Unlimited?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many acres have they bought in the entire U.S. to help save the migratory pathways of ducks in, I mean, because there's flyways all across the United States, because these animals go from South America to the Arctic in some instances. And they've bought old land back and have refurbished an agricultural land and put back that bog or that swamp that was barely existing and turn it back into the happy, healthy habitat. And millions of other people that aren't even involved in hunting got to enjoy that. So it's like these hunting groups, quote unquote, allow the benefit of birders. Birders get to reap those benefits of what
right.
they've done.
Well, and that's why I feel that people who are not hunters might want to consider being part of these conservation groups. You don't have to show a hunting license to join Ducks Unlimited.
No.
You know, you don't have to purchase a hunting license to buy duck stamps.
See what they're really about.
Right. This is a great way to help fund conservation. And, you know, folks who are more the bleeding heart type people, who tend to lean more towards groups like PETA and World Wildlife Fund and organizations like that, thinking, well, this is how we're going to save animals. You know, I'm sure that there are a lot of people within those groups who have their hearts in the right place and who really would like to do something to help save animals. But mostly those groups are politically active more than anything else. They're not boots on the ground in the field making a difference to animals today. They try to influence what legislators are going to do. And they're not as interested in things like habitat conservation so much as they are in making sure that nobody ever goes out and shoots a duck again. But again, I mean, if we didn't have hunters who were so passionate about the sport, then we probably wouldn't have those ducks there these days to even be concerned about, because the habitat would have long since been turned into something else.
Oh, easily.
So
thank you to our grandfathers, more or less, for kind of getting that role. Because you and I would not be able to benefit from that.
No.
There's a lot of areas that I know that you and I have probably been through and checked out that are unknowing to us, that are, hey, this is some pretty cool area, and it might be owned because of those groups that we're not even aware of it.
Right.
Didn't take the time to look it up.
You know, and a lot of this goes back to one of our U.S. presidents, Teddy Roosevelt, who was a huge figure and remains revered in conservation today. The Teddy Roosevelt Conservation Partnership is very active today in helping to shape some of the policies that ensure that conservation still lives, and making sure that we have, for example, access to public lands. You know, if you try to fence people out and don't let them go into these places, then they're going to lose their place in people's hearts. And then when later the conversation comes up of, hey, why are we preserving this place anyway? And it might not be this year or next year. It might be three generations down the line. But if there's no feeling of attachment to that place, then future people, future generations are not going to care about it anymore. They're not going to have the warm and fuzzies for those kinds of places that we have now. So groups like that are amazing in helping make sure that conservation will extend out beyond our lifetimes and continue to be a thing that we, you know, as Americans and as human beings get to enjoy in this world.
Right. Well, and I truly dig your point about you don't have to be a hunter to support it. You don't have to actively do that. You know, if you look at it and you feel that that organization is doing some of the things that you feel in your heart is truly right, buy a duck stamp. You know, join the Ducks Unlimited, you know? I mean, look around for some of those conservation groups and really look into what's the right word for the groups, their mission statement. And then even check and see what they've actually done that follows with that, and do those things actually apply to you? Because you'd be surprised with, if you forget the hunting part of it that you're sticking in your mind, that's going to be so right there in front of you, and look at what all the other parts, take the hunting out of it and look at the rest of what it's really about, it might really, really, truly change your mind on how really good it is.
And when you look at these kinds of things, you need to take a more holistic approach in that you're looking at all of the positives and negatives, okay? Yeah, I get it. To some people, the idea of going out and shooting an animal is just so far beyond that they can't understand it, that they can't get it. But let's look at it from the perspective of the other species that are sharing that habitat with these animals. Like, for example, what Ducks Unlimited has done. That wetlands habitat is vital to waterfowl, but it's utilized by so many other species as well. I mean, look at all of the different wetland species that are being preserved in these areas where, yeah, the ducks are growing there. Some of those ducks are going to end up being shot by hunters, but the salamanders won't be, the turtles won't be, the non-sporting birds that use those wetlands won't be. All of the different mammals and the muskrats and the beavers and all the different fish species that live in those waters, you know,
aquatic and semi-aquatic plants. I mean, yeah. The different lilies and irises and stuff like that.
Some of which have become endangered and would be critically so if it weren't for these wetlands being preserved.
Yeah.
You know, this is vital habitat for more than just the ducks. And again, if there hadn't been somebody there to conserve it because they wanted to make sure there were ducks for the future, then those lands would be gone. We wouldn't have access to them. They'd have been turned into something else.
You'd be reading about them in a history book.
If anybody remembered. Yeah. Which they might not.
True.
You know, I mean, how easy would it be to forget about ducks if we didn't have them anymore? You know, what does anybody know these days about passenger pigeons?
Only a couple.
I mean, used to be one of the most common birds in the U.S., but they've only been gone a couple generations, but out of sight, out of mind.
True.
So, no. But I'm glad to see that we have this conservation ethic that is strong here in the U.S., and that we're starting to see more of it around the world as people start to understand the value of conserving things. You know, one of the big places where conservation is happening now is in Africa, where traditionally you had a few wealthy people who would go on safari there, and they kind of got the ball rolling on conservation because, I mean, even more so than American game animals, African game animals need huge amounts of space. The problem was that those people didn't live in Africa, so they were leaving a lot of what was going to happen to those African lands up to people who did live in Africa, many of whom were desperately poor and discovered that they could make quick money through poaching. Right. So the solution to poaching was initially thought to be, well, we're going to make poaching as illegal as we can. We're going to crack down as hard on these people as we possibly can. We're going to go in there and we're going to shoot them with automatic weapons on sight, and we're going to go after their families, and we're just going to be as harsh as we possibly can be to them. But it didn't work, because these were people who had nothing. They had no other way forward than what they saw as, you know what, if I can get enough money to feed my family for a year by killing that elephant and taking the tusks, then that's great. That solves my problems for a period of time. I can make sure that my family gets fed, because I have no other way to do this going forward. And you know what? If I get shot trying to feed my family, well, you know, I did what I could. I did whatever it took to take care of my family. But we showed them instead that there's another way. And that other way has been through tourism and through keeping their animals alive for people to come and see. And as the world has gotten more wealthy and as it's shrunk with international travel, then ecotourism has become a huge part of conservation. And you get some people who don't like ecotourism, just like people don't like hunting, because they say, well, in a lot of cases, it's exploitation of the animals. Well, in some cases, it probably is, to a certain extent.
Sure.
But would you rather have exploitation in a limited way, or would you rather have extinction forever? Your choice.
Conservation through commercialization.
Exactly.
I'm going with that one.
Yep, precisely.
I've gotten to see some really, really neat stuff, and some of which I've taken for granted over the years that I know I not would have been able to see if it wasn't for other people that were focused in the right direction to to conserve that.
Well, it's okay. You can say preserve if you want to. I saw the slip, but it's all right.
Yeah, I know.
Because, like, but I said, but they, it, but they
it
do
is
go
a,
together.
It is a blurred line. Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah, because even in conserved places, there are probably some really delicate habitats that we have no business going into.
Sure,
places
absolutely.
That we should stay out of.
Yes.
So, and that's, some people don't like that either. I'm a person. I can go wherever I want to. We have domination over the earth. Okay, that's fine. But, you need to set aside some places where you don't really even want to leave footprints.
Right.
Places that are really that delicate, and let them do their thing.
Absolutely.
To me, this is all part of living harmoniously with nature. And I sometimes wish that we as humans didn't, if we weren't so needy, if we didn't take up so much land and so much habitat and demand so much from the natural world, but the fact is we do, and we're going to for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
So since that's going to be the case, conservation is one of the ways that it allows us to live alongside the natural world and carve out places where you say, okay, this is a place here where we're going to let it be whatever it needs to be. And, unfortunately, we do have to manage some of those areas in some ways. They're not enough. They're not big enough to really be self-supporting in a lot of cases. Not every place is as big as Everglades National Park or Yellowstone. A lot of conserved lands are much smaller. Some of them might be only a few acres. The average is probably a few hundred acres. So because they're living in close proximity to people, we do have to manage them a little bit more intensively than we would if they were truly wild lands. But at least it provides a place where nature can exist.
Well, it lets us know where we were at, where we are, and then kind of where you're going. Yeah, that's kind of the cool part about it. I don't know how other way to put it, to go back there, to leave this reality, go back to see that, and be able to give you a much stronger appreciation of what you want to do with your own future, and hope to see those things still around for hopefully future generations, whether it's your children or your children's children. I want them to be able to enjoy all that.
Right. And I'm not planning to have children.
Neither am I.
They probably won't have children either, since they won't exist.
But I've got nephews.
Just knowing that we're leaving it for the future of humanity, for the future of our species. To me, that's enough.
There you go. I like that.
All right. So, if you would like to talk with us about this topic or anything else that we discuss, which could be virtually anything wild, you can do that by emailing us at wildthingsradio@gmail.com, and we might even respond to you. I mean, no guarantees, but there's a fairly good chance. Anything else to talk about, Robert?
No.
That's good, because we're out of time. Why don't you say goodnight?
Good night. And with the wind and the feeling that I'm under. Yeah, I gotta go make it happen. Take the world in a loving embrace. Fire all of your guns and guns and explode into space. Like a true nature's child, we were born to be wild. We can climb. And what I-